Salam guys, before we begin, just a reminder that 786 Boulevard is a platform for Muslims who hold a diverse range of views and opinions. And though you may disagree with some of them, this place is a safe space to have such conversations, appreciate one another, and learn from one another. So from Hasnain and myself, welcome back to 786 Boulevard, and this is episode 31, Artists Speaking Up for Palestine. With the recent images and videos coming out of Palestine, a resurgence in pro-Palestinian voices has taken over social media, with many artists from various fields highlighting the atrocities being committed against the Palestinians. Today we speak to Mazi, an artist based out of New York and hailing from Jersey City, New Jersey.
I can describe Palestine in one sentence. It's the most beautiful and most depressing place in the world at the same time.
Mazi has been vocal about the Palestinian cause his entire career, visiting Palestine multiple times for humanitarian work, conducting workshops, talent shows, and live performances for Palestinian youth. Committed to philanthropy, he has donated 100% of all the proceeds of his albums to charitable causes. Mazi has been in the music industry since the 90s and has opened for some of the biggest names in hip-hop. We'll be speaking to him about Palestine, speaking of Palestine, his charitable work, and his career. Welcome back to 786 Boulevard. How did you feel? I know it's a very kind of simple but heavy question. How did you feel this time round, seeing, you know, the videos coming out? First seeing, for example, the attacks on Al-Aqsa and then the bombing on Gaza and you know, just kind of like seeing the imagery that was coming out. How did it make you feel?
Part of me was like, oh, here we go again, you know. But also seeing the coverage, the massive social media coverage, was, I don't know if breath of fresh air is a good term to use, but for lack of better terms, it was a breath of fresh air to see so many young kids, whether they were millennials or Gen Zers, you know, actually pushing forward, you know, the agenda of freeing Palestine and bringing awareness to people. And so many people finally understanding what we've been advocating for 20 plus years.
What was, I guess, different about it? Because, you know, like you said, you've been advocating and protesting for Palestine for such a long time. And I agree with you. I think, you know, everyone who was speaking about it, who'd been speaking about Palestine for the past decade or so, was saying the same thing, that, you know, it's different now. People are waking up. You know, it's not like it was before. But specifically, what was different? What felt different this time around?
I definitely knew it was different now because people in Palestine are telling us that it's different. You know what I'm saying? That the solidarity is more across the board. And of course there's some, you know, there's some move fakers, you know, but that's always going to be there. But all in all, the solidarity has been so massive in different countries. And I think even now with the ceasefire, you know, there's still, it's people haven't let off the gas as much. They're still pushing forward because we all know what that ceasefire is. You know, it's just smoke and mirrors. You know, I attribute it to the young generation, and I attribute it to social media. Like, those two things have been the catalyst, because the, you know, mainstream media is not going to do it. You know, that's 100%. Not happening. So it's up to us.
100%. Hasnain, what about you? Because I know, you know, I think me and you were speaking behind the scenes and talking about the sentiments when things were unfolding. And we saw the protests that were happening, which were, you know, just beautiful. By your house in Queens, in New York, here in London as well. It's all over the world, really. So, you know, what was the energy like, I guess, when it came to people coming out and speaking for Palestine?
It was insane. I know the UK had like the biggest march, 200 plus K people. But I went to the one in Bay Ridge, which is massive. I went to the one here in Queens, which was also massive.
Yeah, I was at that one too.
Yeah. And I went to the one in the city, right in front of the embassy.
Yeah, I was there
too. Yeah, I know.
You guys keep crossing paths.
Probably. But what was the most beautiful part of it? It was that, one, you see Muslims all shapes and colors come out, but even not even that, you see like white people come out, you see like even Jewish people come out, you see people that, you know, you're just like, okay, wow, like this is amazing. Like you see, you see like the African American, the Black brothers come out too. So it's just like, it's not a Muslim thing, you know? And I think people are starting to realize like, this is not okay. Like Palestine is going under attack. It's a Muslim thing. No, it's, you know, it's apartheid. It's like this huge thing. And that's what I love about it. You know, like that's typical New York, right? Like you're going to have everybody just show up. And everybody knows what's going on. And I think like the whole rhetoric is changing. So the vibes were insane. People standing on like buses, people were standing on like poles.
I feel like this kind of new age and wave of activism protesting really sparked, because people were first protesting, for example, for the women's for the women's march. Then there was the Muslim ban, and then last year, for example, after George Floyd, you see how many people came out to protest for African American rights and for Black Lives Matter. And I feel like what's beautiful about it is that all these kind of fights are connected together. You know, I just kind of think that, you know, that is what's kind of inshallah awakening, is that people are awakening to oppression all around the world and standing up for it no matter what it is. Mazi, you've been doing this Clubhouse event recently, which is artists speaking up for Palestine, which I really think is fantastic. And I do feel like in the music industry generally, and perhaps you can speak to this better than I can, but I feel like in the music industry generally, like any industry in entertainment, it's a taboo to speak out for Palestine. You know, you're kind of outcasted when you do. So is it a taboo in the music industry? I mean, based on what you've seen, who you've worked with, what's the story there?
It might be a taboo, but it's not that necessarily they'll try to shut you up. I mean, they might try to shut down some people, but it's more that they don't even pay it any attention. You know, they just try to like ignore it or sweep it under the rug, or just, you know, be like, okay. It's something that doesn't concern them. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if there's a massive amount. I mean, there's a lot of Jewish people in the music industry. Are they necessarily Zionists? I don't know. I haven't had that conversation with many of them.
Right.
So whether that's the reason or not, I don't know. But I know that it's, what I do know is that it's an issue that gets swept under the rug and not really spoken about. I haven't seen, aside from the public things that we've all seen, I haven't seen anything behind the scenes that has tried to muffle or put a muzzle on somebody. Okay. But it's definitely not addressed. It's not addressed.
Let's take a step back, because I think we went right into this conversation and I think the audience needs to know who you are. So let's take a step back. Give us a little background, what you do. I mean, I've seen your work. I love it. I want to get into a little bit of it. But I mean, this is a heavier topic. So let's take a step back, let the audience know who you are, and then we can just move on from there.
Okay, cool. My name is Mazi. I'm a recording artist, touring artist. I've been to 50 countries, some of them multiple times, toured basically around the world. Every project I put out, every album I put out, 100% of it goes to a different charity. So philanthropy and music is hand in hand with what I do. The crew is Soul Purpose right here, as you can see. Sense of understanding life's purpose. I've put out double-digit amount of records. I mean, I'm going on album number 13 now. So as far as me, you know, so addressing social injustice, awareness and activism and philanthropy has all been hand in hand, woven within the fabric of my music for 20 plus years. But also in addition, on my career side, aside from that, my second, you know, flip of the other side of the coin, I work in the music industry. I work at Def Jam Records, been there many years. I do marketing and promotions there. So I get to see both sides of the fence. I see both sides of the industry.
Where would you say that kind of that drive for, because I noticed as well, you know, you do a lot of charity and philanthropy. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, not just your albums and the proceeds, but in fact, the fact that you travel around and you've been, for example, to Palestine and Israel and refugee camps, which we'll get into afterwards. But where would you say that drive for philanthropy and charity comes from? I mean, what kind of sparked that in you?
Well, I come from humble beginnings. I didn't grow up rich. I came from, you know, any low budget environment that a lot of us came from. And, you know, certain things we couldn't control. You know, I couldn't control that there was a liquor store on every corner. I couldn't control that there was violence and drugs and, you know, all the crazy stuff that goes on in urban areas. I couldn't control that. But if there's certain things that I could control and contribute and give back, then I would, then I can, and I will. My mother was an activist. So, you know, I've been going to protests since the mid 80s, you know, since I was really, 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 really young, you know, say as far back as I can remember. And the term Zionism, I learned in the mid 80s or late 80s because of my mother. She took me to protests, whether it was the UN or Washington, D.C. So that drive also comes from there. And then also the last reason is, you know, the humanity of it all. You know, I'm not going to wait till if I become a tycoon or some rich guy to give back. We can all give back on the way up, you know, even locally. We've done so many homeless drives in New York. We've done so many things domestically in America, charity-wise. So even when I go overseas, it doesn't always have to be album-based. It could be workshops. It could be classes. It could be donations. It could be panels, whatever it is, events. So, yeah, on any level, you know what I'm saying? That's what I do because I am an artist. So it's my duty to, in my eyes, to give back in that way. I'm not saying anybody else should do that. That's just what drives me. You know what I'm saying? That's just what sparks my ingenuity and my motivation.
You know what's the beauty of being an artist is that majority of art, whether it's, you know, making films or making music, comes from a form of like activism, or like, in my opinion, activism is so much so heavily rooted in hip hop in general. I mean, like, you know, not trying to get too deep, but I was reading a little bit about your bio, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're from Jersey City, New Jersey, and now live in Queens, right? I'm born and raised from Queens myself. And, you know, growing up, there's certain artists that I've listened to. The first one that comes to my mind is Nas, who I grew up listening to because he's from Queens. So I grew up with him, grew up listening to him. And if you just listen to his music, there's just so much about storytelling and activism and, you know, black on black crime, for certain examples, and how, you know, kids don't have the same opportunities when you're colored. So, you know, it's amazing to see the correlation between activism and hip hop. And one thing that really came to my mind, and I'm pretty sure you guys saw it, was that 12-year-old rapper from Gaza who was rapping on an Eminem beat, talking about the struggles there. You know, what do you think about that? You know, I think it's a very beautiful thing. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I just wanted to see your perspective of it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's beautiful. And one thing I got to say about Jersey City, Queens, I also live in Manhattan, and I lived in Brooklyn, and I've been all over the you know, metropolitan area of New York. One thing that's beautiful about it is that we're so diverse. It's 89% diversity right here. The block I grew up on had 11 ethnicities on it. You know, that says a lot. I'm saying from one corner to the other, you know? So imagine how all these other neighborhoods are. So that's beautiful that we have that and we grew up in that. And, you know, this is the birthplace of hip hop, and hip hop was bred out of this, you know? So to see a kid in the middle of Gaza spitting that is amazing. And I've been like following his freestyles. He's, you know, and his rhymes. So he's, you know, he's a talented little kid, man. And, you know, there's a lot of talent in Gaza, you know, shout out to my man, Amen. He's still out there. He's part of one of the original rap groups in Gaza. But yeah, there's a lot of talent there, and I'm just glad one of them, is catching that kind of light, you know, and he's a young brother and he has a promising career ahead of him. So I can't wait to hear more from him. You know, it's hip hop. Hip hop is about telling your truth, and he's telling his truth, you know, it's beautiful.
100%. I guess off the back of that, how can we utilize, obviously music, hip hop, and I guess art generally, or why is it important to utilize our talents? And I guess you kind of like alluded to the answer already, but why do you think it's important to utilize our artistic talents to speak out for causes like Palestine?
I don't put that burden or that duty on artists, but because you can do what you want as an artist. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not going to look at an artist and be like, you didn't do that. I don't care what anybody else does, you know. But understand this, that we're not, as musicians, as artists, as creatives, we're not doctors, we're not lawyers, we're not soldiers. So the way we give back is through our art. And, you know, that's one thing I've noticed traveling the world, especially in Palestine, because Palestine is real. It gaslights you, gets you really angry to see all the atrocities. You know what I'm saying? So you're like, oh, I want to become a ninja warrior, Batman assassin. Like, this is crazy, you know, but you can't. You got to be like, okay, I'm a musician. I have to give back in this way. The kids need this from me. And this is what I have. This is the talent I have. And this is what I have to return, give back. And then let the doctors do what they do. Let the soldiers do what they do. Let the poppers pop, let the breakers break. So I just feel, for me, it's a duty because it's something that's God-given. It's a God-given talent. It's only right to throw it back into the universe.
Beautiful.
So speaking about your visitation to Palestine, and, you know, obviously it must have been tough for you, but it must have also been a blessing for you because not everybody gets to go, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I wish one day I can go too. You know, aside from that, you know, you put out a single, Sugar, which was proceeds went to South Africa, right? Yeah. Beautiful song, loved it, listened to it, amazing song. And then when I was listening to it, I was like, you know what, this is amazing. Like the fact that each song is correlated to a place that either you've been to or most likely you've been to, or you want to help that the people there, right? But then on my other brain was saying me, okay, you know, like the way you rhyme, the way you spit, it's very, very old school. Very, very old school. Like when I was listening to it, it was just coming out to like when I was younger, and I was like 12, 15 years old, and I was listening to hip hop back then. So basically, what I'm trying to ask you is like, do you mimic your art, or do you base your art off of somebody or like your childhood artist that you grew up with, and that's kind of how you want to be noticed as, or like how do you go about that art form?
First of all, when you say the word old school, it has kind of a connotation to it. I know what you mean, but yeah. When you say old school, like, oh, this guy's like rapping like, you know, one, two, 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 two.
I don't mean that. You know what I mean.
I know what you mean. You mean some classic hip hop lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. That's what you mean. Like typical New York, like, you know, 1995, 96, 97, yeah. 98, 99, like that type of stuff.
It's when people cared about their pen and their pad and what they basically put together. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying that. I don't want people to be like, yo, like, what? Where's this guy going to right
now? Oh, yeah, hands in the air and wave them like, just don't care. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, you know,
nothing wrong with that.
That's the foundation. Shout out to all the pioneers. But, yeah, yeah, you know, I remember I was, you know, well, the reason that's being is I've been putting out records for a long time. I'm putting out records since 1999, you know, right. And before that performing and putting out music before that as well. So I've been on the New York scene since 95. I started very, very young. I'm a little older than I look, but I'm not that old. So
don't give away your age, bro.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. My influence comes from New York, of course, a lot of it. California too. It comes from all over, but you know, my pen game comes from a few different people. The pen game influence who's influenced me has been 100%. Number one is Brand Nubian. Number two, I'll give you the other few in no particular order. Pharoah Monch, OC, Busta Rhymes, Big Daddy Kane. So these are Big Pun. These are all lyricists. These are all like pen magicians. You know what I'm saying? So
right. That's
where I got it from. Now, to as far as what I talk about, it's things that I, you know, OC said it best. Things that I've seen, done, or heard about. You know, and a lot of it is things that I've seen and done. Some are that I heard about. And then, you know, you amass a creative well within that, and you dip into that well, and you find different ways of expressing it. And, you know, sometimes you got to eat like this, sometimes you got to eat like this, you know what I'm saying? So it's different ways of attacking different subjects. And I think Sean Price said it once. He's like, everybody talks about basically the same thing, is how you flip that thing. You know, so I try to flip it in different ways. There's the, you know, there's always, everybody has their little original content and original ideas, but it's also, nothing's also original under the sun at the same time. So it's all about how you take it, flip it, and freak the whole concept. So that's what I always try to do. And that's what we did with Sugar. Sugar is part of an EP that I did in South Africa with a sister named O'Terrell. And crazy enough, it was January 1st, 2020. I was in South Africa. She's like, hey, let's do an EP. I'm like, all right. She's like, come to the studio. I'm like, all right. We go to the studio. There's these two producers. And we pick the beats, write the songs, record them, and finish everything in 15 hours. So the project was done in 15 hours. Wow. We started in early afternoon, January 1st, 2020. By the end of the night, we were done. So it was pretty crazy. And the name of the EP is called Chromosomes, and 100% of the profits are going to an organization to help the youth in South Africa, in Johannesburg. So yeah, so I love that kind of organic, you know, synergy in the studio. I love that. So yeah, just, you know, and Sugar is not some, Sugar is about, for, you know, for those who don't know, it's about domestic abuse. And one is from a perspective of an abuser, of an abusive boyfriend, and the other is from a perspective of an abused woman or the girlfriend. And she plays that role and I play the abuser role. And I've never done that, but I had to put myself in the space of somebody who is like that. I've had friends who've done that. I've seen people do it that did it. So I was kind of able to take my mind state and put it in theirs and come up with that. So yeah, it definitely brought a lot of awareness to that.
To domestic. Why do you think it's so important? I feel like a lot of your music touches on such deep, you know, important issues, obviously, like what you're speaking about as well, but as well, like domestic violence. I mean, why do you think it's important to make art about issues that are so, so deep and so serious and have real effects on people?
I think you should, you know, I'm cut from the cloth of versatility. So I feel like, you know, if you, for instance, I'll use that Chromosomes EP as an example. We have a song called Sugar, but then we have a song that me and O'Terrell are just going back and forth and just displaying wordplay, you know what I'm saying? And just being jovial, you know what I'm saying? So I think we should be, as artists, I've always learned to be, I'm a man, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, sometimes I want to be deep. Sometimes I want to be introspective. Sometimes I want to have fun. Sometimes I want to talk my, I'm sorry if I cursed. Sometimes I want to, you know, just have a good time with my friends. Sometimes I want to talk crazy, you know? So it's important to show all the dimensions as a human being. For me, some people just are one trick ponies. Some people just like to stick to one thing or a couple of things, but I like to just spread it around the board, but still keeping my identity of who I am, and that silver lining.
Got it. Every time you curse, we gotta find you. Just remember that. We gotta blur you. We gotta find you $1,000 every time.
Wow. Right? I only cursed once, so I'm all right. So
you're down a grand right now.
Hasnain, before you jump in, there's one thing I really like which you talk about is you talk about being part of a collective, and you always talk about including those that support you as part of that collective. So people who like invited you to perform or have listened to your stuff or whatever. I guess why is it so important to create art from a place of inclusiveness as opposed to from a place of selfishness, which I feel like a lot of people also do.
You just explained the sole purpose motto. And sense of understanding life's purpose. I always say we because if you guys weren't here to do this interview, there'll be no interview. If I'm in a space performing and there's nobody to watch me, there's no show. You know what I'm saying? I might as well be rapping in front of a mirror. So I am, as an artist, I'm nothing without the people who have contributed to the collective. And so I say Soul Purpose is the biggest crew in hip hop because whoever helps me or helps the movement in any way, you're automatically in the crew. So you guys are automatically part of my rap group. This is amazing.
Oh, yes. What's the perks?
And anybody who's listening or watching this, you know, also you're in it. Whether you like it or not, you're in the crew. So we're the biggest crew in hip hop, all right? If you open a door for me, you lend me a dollar, you're in. You're in, bro. It's so easy to get down in my crew.
Mazi, I did want to speak about specifically your journeys to Palestine and Israel for humanitarian work. I guess tell me about those experiences and how they changed you and changed your perceptions. Because I think for all of us, it's one thing to see news coming out of Palestine and to hear stats, you know, this many people were killed, this many people are, you know, need help. Or I feel like that's what's happening, and that's what happens eventually, is that people, whether you like or not, just become stats. Stories become stats, numbers on a screen or for a newsfeed, right? But going there, experiencing it, seeing people, seeing souls in front of you, and experiencing that firsthand, I feel like it has a tremendous impact on one's perspective. So I guess tell me about those trips and how they changed you and changed your perspective in regards to what was happening on the ground.
Well, first of all, I'm a firm believer in experience is the best teacher. Part of the reason why I love to travel and really experience things that people always talk about. Oh, there's pyramids in Egypt. I'm going to go see these pyramids. You know, there's ruins in Rome. I'm going to go check these out. You know, so I want to always experience it. So the first thing I'll definitely say is with Palestine, if you have the ability to go there and actually see what's going on, I encourage it, because you have to come back and really let the masses know, because if not, people can, you know, it could turn into that, into a numbers thing and a stats thing. I've been there 10 times, first time in 2009, 8 or 9, something like that. But, you know, as Middle Eastern kids, as Muslims, we grew up knowing that Palestinian struggle. We've known that story. We've been told it, and we've been kind of like raised with the solidarity. But to actually go and experience that and see it, it's a whole nother level. I came back from my first trip. I remember I came back and we had a huge promotion for Young Jeezy at my job. And I'm like, Young Jeezy, who? No, I just came back from some real, real, real stuff right now. Like, I mean, I did my job, obviously, but my first reaction involuntarily was that, you know, like, do you know where I just came from? And this is me having a conversation with myself in my head. But yeah, it definitely changes you. And I can describe Palestine in one sentence. It's the most beautiful and most depressing place in the world at the same time. Beautiful because, for instance, if you go to, let's not even, we can use Gaza as an example, the beautiful beaches, just how the water is. It's such a sight to see, even in the rubble, even in the chaos. But you could also go to somewhere like Jerusalem, where you have Della Rosa, which is the road that leads to the church that they built where Jesus was crucified. Della Rosa is where he kept falling when they had him on the cross. That road, Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Wailing Wall, are literally 3-minute walks from each other.
Wow.
That's how close everything is. So that's how beautiful it is. Like when you're walking in an old city, there's like, it's like mystic. It's like, there's like a mist of spirituality everywhere. Like you just feel it, you know what I mean? And it's very riveting. But then also I'm there and settlers come and storm Al-Aqsa with holding up a map saying how they're going to tear it down and raise up Solomon's temple. And then of course Palestinians react and it turns into a riot. You know, I was in the middle of that. And that's just one example of several chaotic things that happened there. And you know, that's where you're like, damn, this is crazy. Like, why here? You know, and then you know, you go to over the wall and you go into Ramallah and the West Bank, and you see the conditions that which the people are living in, but then you see how welcoming and beautiful these people are, and how good they treat you. And you know, if you want a shirt off your back, they'll literally give you the shirt off their back. So but then the condition they're living in is an atrocity. So it's such a back and forth. You go to somewhere like Hebron, which is probably one of the most depressing places on earth. You go there and, you know, you have the beautiful ancient bazaar, you have Abraham's mosque, but then you have settlers who have poisoned the olive trees of the people who live there. They've thrown debris, feces and urine on top of the people who are just trying to sell, who have their stores in the bazaar. You have IDF soldiers who are just, you know, scaring the people and harassing them at the checkpoint. And you have settlers that attack the Palestinians at night, and women who have lost their pregnancies, kids who have got their teeth smashed in just for existing, you know what I'm saying? So it's such a duality, bro. And it's such a mind F. See, I didn't curse.
Save yourself $1,000.
Yeah. It just hits your brain like a ton of bricks, bro. Like, and your spirit, you know? So you have to go in there expecting this stuff, but you're still gonna get hit like a truck, like a Mack, with a Mack truck, either way.
I think that description definitely brought tears to my eyes. I don't know about you, Hasnain, I would say that, you know, echoing your statements, I've never been to Palestine. I do want to go, especially just after hearing that. And you know, inshallah, hopefully you get a chance to go. I feel like, based on my own visits to Iraq specifically, and seeing the poverty there, I was doing some charity work out there, and I think my kind of realization that kind of got to me with experience again is kind of realizing to myself, hey, these aren't just poor kids, these aren't just poor Iraqi Arab kids from the other side of the world, these are future artists, future filmmakers, future musicians, you know, future scientists. And I guess in terms of that kind of context,
let me ask you this, right? And I want to know if it's parallel to what I experienced with the Palestinian kids, because I went there as a person to teach them, to have workshops with them and help them with music, arts and culture, right? But they ended up giving me better lessons in life. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So they were actually better teachers to me. I learned from them. But tell me if this is a parallel when you went to Iraq, right? I thought that the kids would be angry. They want to get revenge and they're ready to bust back and all that. No, they just want, they want peace. They want to live in peace and serenity. That's all they want. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if it's the same that you experienced in Iraq.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And the thing is, like, each of those kids, like, you ask them, what do you want to become? And I swear to you, bro, the answer I hear 70% of the time is teacher. I want to become a teacher. And there's some sort of generosity and selflessness in that. And I think beyond the fact that they want peace, I think their level of wisdom and maturity is something you expect out of a grown man.
Yes.
Here in the countries that we live in, but you see it in them. And I guess, I mean, how the question I was kind of leading to is how can we help change perspectives of people here in the UK and in the US who still see Palestinians, Iraqis, anyone who's impoverished as stats and not as people, as children who have such positive futures ahead of them, were they not to be in this situation? How can we help change perceptions? How can we help take our own experiences and translate that for people back home?
One way, and it's been proven to me from friends who have came with us to Palestine and then came back and shared their story all around, whether it's in colleges or just even in their neighborhood, you know, whether it's speaking publicly or just in their neighborhood to their friends and to their circle, is really taking those stories and those experiences and sharing it with people, and the true unfiltered stories, real life stories of these people. One person in particular was M1 from Dead Press. He came with us to the West Bank and he came with us to Gaza. And he went back and he was giving talks in colleges, you know what I'm saying? And panels and what have you. So that's one way. And another thing, like for instance, going back to Clubhouse, most of the time what we're doing, or at least half the time in those Clubhouse rooms, Artists with Palestine, we're sharing stories, whether it's our experiences there or people from there who have told us stories, or people on stage who are from there telling us their story. So it's all about sharing those real, real unfiltered stories. That's how you really shift it. And the stats matter. The stats help when you want to improve your point or show certain things or prove certain things. But those real life stories are the thing that things that touch people's hearts. Look, like I just told you, I didn't even get into the specifics of stories. I gave you like a summary of Hebron and you felt it. You know what I'm saying? You were empathetic toward it. So imagine really spreading those specific stories to people. If you have any humanity in your body, you're going to feel it. You know what I'm saying? Minus all the propaganda, the political mumbo jumbo. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword because unfortunately, if for somebody in the position where you can reach a masses, your stories can get out. But if you are somebody who relies on social media, and we all know what's been going on with social media lately, when you're trying to share stories and get the story out about Palestine, about how people are saying, especially people big on social media, how like their viewers are getting less or something like that. There's been a few Instagram pages that you know were kind of deactivated from Instagram and whatnot. So I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Like for somebody like myself, who's felt it, who's seen stories that are not Palestine related get the normal views that I normally get versus the stories that I share that are you know legitimate stories, fact checked and whatnot, and I want to get that out to my crowd who's not mostly Muslim but you know diverse crowds, and you see that okay my views are maybe a third of that all of a sudden, so it's kind of a double-edged sword. So any advice around that? What do you think we should do?
One, persistence overcomes resistance. You got to keep pushing. You got to keep pushing, find different ways to continue to consistently alert people and let them know and make them aware. And then the second thing is micro marketing. Like it's really like, let's say us three, like you know, Nuri, you have maybe 1,000 followers and Hasnain, you have maybe 2,000 and I have 1,500, right? If we all three of us push that narrative,
right.
And then five of our followers push the narrative as well. And then 10 of theirs. And that's the micro marketing that's going to, and it's been happening, as you can see, like
right.
These young kids are pushing 100%. Forward, you know what I'm saying? And they've been censored too. So it's persistence, overcoming the resistance combined with this micro marketing that we need to do. Each right. One, teach one, reach one another.
The last thing on my mind is, and I've been seeing a lot about this and you know, you working with top-notch people. I mean, people who want to read about you can go to your bio, but you've worked with some of the top artists. I saw Eminem on that list. I saw, you know, a bunch of other people on that list. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to discuss with you, and I've seen it, it's been relevant in the recent years, but I think it's been pretty big recently, is the cancel culture of how, like, you know, going back to our topic earlier about, like, you know, if artists aren't speaking about it, you know, if DJ Khaled and Belly and them are not speaking about it, you know, they're canceled. You know, Rihanna was the two sides of the same coin, all could cancel her, or like, you know, this, that, and the, like, how do you feel about that? You know, like, I'm not a fan of cancel culture. I think everybody holds their own opinion. That's fine with me. You have your grave, I have mine. That's kind of the function I work with. I just don't like it. But then again, like I can understand why people are frustrated with it and they want to cancel somebody out really quickly. You know, how dangerous is that? You know, like, what do you think about that?
I think we shouldn't waste our time too much with it. And it also aids to something else, which is engaging with Zionists. You know, I don't think we need Dave. The line in the sand has been drawn. Like we don't need to waste our time arguing and going back and forth and trying to convince Zionists. It's a waste of your positive energy that you could be using toward the progression of the people on your side. So one, don't engage unless you have to. Don't engage with Zionists because you're not going to change their mind. And even if you win the quote unquote debate, they're going to still think what they think. You know what I'm saying? So, stay away from engaging with those Zionists. And by the way, there's a difference between engaging and arguing with Zionists and actually dropping knowledge and teaching somebody about something that they don't know. It's two different things. So stay away from the Zionists. And the second thing is, don't worry about, which is to your point, don't worry about the artists. It's just in the same vein. Don't worry about the artists who are not supporting. I don't care if they're Palestinian. I don't care if they're Martians. You know, if they're not on the side, the right side of history, if they're not on the side that you're advocating, which is side of humanity, then and basic human rights, then just ignore them. Like, just, we don't have time for that. We don't have time to worry about what, you know, DJ so-and-so or MC so-and-so or whatever, producer so-and-so does. Yeah, they disgust me and we should, like, maybe, you know, to make our statement about them. Like, I remember when Dwight Howard a few years ago made a statement, he said, free Palestine, he was standing in solidarity. He got pressure from Zionists and he changed it. He said, oh, my bad, I'm sorry. And he retracted the statement. And what I did, I made a post and I called him Dwight Coward. You know, so yeah, you could do little things like that, but then I'm just shoving Dwight Howard to the side. That Dwight Howard's not a thought to me anymore. He's not in solidarity. All right, next, who's next? Same thing with if Rihanna, you know, whoever, it doesn't matter. Either you're with us, come on, let's work towards something positive and progress together, or I don't have time, just move out of my way. You know what I'm saying? I'll say my little remarks and I'm moving forward. And that's how we should all be, because we need all the positive energy we can use, because the other side is organized. Let me tell you, they're organized and they're very well funded. So we have to use everything we have to throw in a pot to keep our engine going.
Yeah. So Nuri, on this side of the pond, we have a sport called basketball. So Dwight Howard is an NBA player.
Oh, thank you. Okay, I had no idea. Thank you so much for telling me. Jeez.
He's not with Chelsea or whatever. What is it?
You still lost me. So I'm lost on both fronts.
You don't follow football. I don't.
No, I'm the only Brit that doesn't follow football. So to be fair, basketball's probably the only sport I do kind of follow. So I guess. I should have known who Dwight Howard was. Anyway, so just, I guess, ending with a final question. And this is a question we ask all of the guests that we bring on. I think spirituality is something that means different things to different people. And I think that with you, like, just kind of looking at what you do in your artwork, I feel like spirituality is already very evident, given the fact that you're giving so much back to people and to people in need. And investing so much time in philanthropy, for example, you know, your albums, giving 100% of profits toward people, and I think that's absolutely beautiful. So I guess where do you say that spirituality falls into your art form, and how does it kind of guide what you do, both in art and I guess in activism as well?
It's the spinal cord. You know, I'm no saint. I've done, even music wise, I've done some vulgar stuff in my past, and I've done many things that quote unquote are un-Islamic, but you know, it's been my spinal cord to get me through everything. You know, zakat is one of our pillars, so that's just natural. You know what I'm saying? I just feel it as a duty. Again, not saying anybody else, it's just me. I'm just talking about myself, not putting this on anybody. I don't want anybody to feel guilty or anything, but yeah, so that's, to me, that's a duty. And again, I couldn't get it done without everybody on the ground helping me and also giving their time, their energy, their talent. And that's a form of their charity, you know, giving and helping the collective. So, you know, that has been the spinal cord, the spirituality. But also, it's helped me get through the music industry, because the music industry itself is very, very, very draining. I've seen people come into the music industry with bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and left soulless. You know, music is one of the most soulful things on earth. The music business, the music industry is just one of the most soulless. So, you know, holding on to the deen, whether on any level that I have been able to, you know what I'm saying, has saved me from so many ugly things. So, you know, I thank God for that every day, because if I didn't have that, I don't know what kind of person I would have turned out to be.
Mazi, appreciate you, bro. Thank you so much for spending time with us. If anyone wants to reach out to you or follow you or find your work, where can they go?
It could go to my website, soulpurposecrew.com, soulpurposecrew.com, or just hit me on the on Instagram at itsmazzi, I-T-S-M-A-Z-Z-I, I-T-S-M-A-Z-Z-I, and it's the same thing on Twitter.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bro.
That was a wonderful conversation with Mazzi. Mazzi, brother, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your wisdom, and inshallah we can have you back here again soon. We end this episode leaving our thoughts and prayers with the Palestinian people and their struggle, and a promise to ourselves to do better in using whatever means we have at our disposal, be it our artistic talents or at the very least our voices, to highlight the atrocities being committed against them and to highlight their struggle. Inshallah, we'll be back next Sunday and every Sunday here at 786 Boulevard. See you there. Assalamu alaikum.